Well, good afternoon. This is Jerry Newcomb, and our guest right now is Mark Tooley of the Institute of Religion, Institute for Religion and Democracy, and he's written a very interesting article called Religion and Voters in 2012. I should say this program is being pre-recorded on Wednesday for play live on Thursday in the afternoon. Mark, welcome to the program.
Yes, great to be with you.
Okay, can you explain for us what your organization is?
Well, the IRD, Institute on Religion and Democracy, is an ecumenical Christian think tank in Washington, D.C. that's been around for 31 years, and we report about what churches and religious leaders are doing and saying politically, but commonly we're described as a watchdog of the religious left, which for most of our history has been especially mainline Protestant agencies, but increasingly also liberal evangelicals.
Okay. Well, the after the election results, a lot of people were thinking, well, the religious right is all but dead. First, let's start with that. What are your thoughts on that sentiment? Is it true?
Well, it seems a little bit premature and almost odd in that evangelicals actually increased as a percentage, white evangelicals increased as a percentage of the overall electorate this year. 2004 had been considered the high watermark of white evangelical vote in that they turned out in force for George W. Bush and comprised 23% of the electorate in 2004. But this year, white evangelicals were up to 26%, over a quarter of the electorate, and they voted for Romney as much, if not slightly more, than they did for George W. Bush. So it's difficult to say that over a quarter of the electorate can be written off.
All right, this article that you wrote, Religion and Voters in 2012, it says this: whatever the reasons for Mitt Romney's defeat and Barack Obama's victory, it cannot be faulted on traditional religious voters who seem to have voted in force. And yet, I mean, that's a terrific point that you're making there, and yet, you know, I've been starting to see articles where, you know, oh, it's time for the Republican Party to drop the whole issue of abortion. It reminded me of the old line from Groucho Marx where he says, well, those are my principles, and if you don't like them, I've got other principles. But anyway, what are your thoughts on should the Republican Party do a total makeover and essentially become the Democratic Party light?
Well, it's an odd conclusion to come to, given that social issues were barely raised during this campaign, at least from the Republican side. So it's very difficult to say that they were the cause of the defeat. And I think many people would point out that successful national Republican campaigns have typically focused not just on economic issues, but have included social issues as well as foreign policy issues. That was true for both of the George W. Bush campaigns, mm-hmm. for George H.W. Bush in 1988 and for Reagan both times, as well as for the successful Republican congressional years like 1994. So I think it would be even more based on the facts of this election to say that what happened was Republicans decided to take a pass on social issues this year, and in some ways that seems to have left some otherwise potential voters left out of the equation.
Hmm. Well, here's one of the things you said in your article. Even in an American electorate that remains overwhelmingly religious, with only 12% disclaiming any religious affiliation, Obama was able to win by cobbling together the unreligious Catholics and Protestants, the unreligious, Catholics and Protestants less likely to attend church, and overwhelming majorities of Hispanic Catholics and Black Protestants. In some ways, the key to this whole thing were lapsed Christians that weren't attending church, but I guess there was a big difference between church-going people versus non-church-going people, even if they claim to be Christian.
Well, that's right. There's been a lot of attention to the fact that, according to exit polls, Obama got a majority of Catholic voters by 50-48%, but Romney got a strong majority of actual church-going Catholics. So, for example, weekly church-going Catholics favored Romney by 57-42%. and weekly Protestant church attenders favored Romney by 70% to 29%. Huh. So church-going America gave pretty strong majorities to Romney, but Obama was able to win by, as you say, winning over the more the less frequently attending churchgoers and the more nominally affiliated, as well as the still relatively small percentage of Americans who profess to have no religious affiliation. And, of course, throw into that equation that he got virtually the entire black Protestant vote, which was 8 or 9% of the total, as well as overwhelming majorities of Hispanic Catholics, as well as even most evangelical Hispanics, although Romney did better among them than he did Catholic Hispanics.
You know, that's amazing to me about the Hispanics. I remember Ronald Reagan once said that when you look at Hispanics in terms of their values and everything, they're basically Republicans. They just don't know it.
Well, George W. Bush had gotten a strong majority of Hispanic evangelicals in 2004, and Hispanic evangelicals are probably about 20% of the total Hispanic population in the U.S. But Romney, although the exit polls this year did not calculate the figure for Hispanic evangelicals, the Pew poll, I believe, indicated that Romney got perhaps about 35% of Hispanic evangelicals, maybe slightly more, compared to his overall total, which was under 30%. So that's a big decline when Bush got to perhaps 60% of Hispanic evangelicals.
Yeah. Well, okay. What are the conclusions from your studies and, you know, from your research based on all these statistics? And by the way, this is all essentially, a part of it is based on Ralph Reed and his work with the Faith and Freedom Coalition. But what's the conclusions of this for the future?
Well, there's a media narrative that America is becoming overwhelmingly post-religious or non-religious, and therefore future successful campaigns can basically ignore both religion and social issues, or be openly liberal on social issues, and that the facts just don't bear that out. The electorate is still, at least in terms of how they describe themselves, overwhelmingly religious. In the exit polls, only 12% professed no formal religious affiliation, and 42% of all voters said they attend church weekly or more. And that's about as that figure has remained remarkably stable for about 80 years. So religion remains and will almost certainly continue to be a strong force in American culture and American politics. And I think politicians who want to be successful have to keep that in mind.
Well, now, when it comes, though, to, let's say, the minorities, especially those in evangelical churches, it's kind of surprising. I mean, the president did come out and embrace same-sex marriage. He never met an abortion he didn't like. I mean, I'm sorry, but he's just the most pro-abortion president we've ever had. He's put a damp on religious liberty from some perspectives. And yet, despite that, he got all these good votes from the minorities that were religious and church-going.
He did. So, for example, black churchgoers are regarded as overwhelmingly opposed to same-sex marriage, but that obviously did not affect their vote this time. And Hispanic voters, churchgoers, not as strongly anti-same-sex marriage, but certainly many of them are, and that seems not to have deeply affected their vote this time. So economic issues or economic self-interest seem to have prevailed this year, not just with blacks and Hispanics, but with many in the electorate. And Republicans and conservatives will need to address that and to be more tactical in terms of how they make their appeal. And also keep in mind that the Romney campaign basically decided to focus on economic issues exclusively this time and ignored the social issues. And I think we see that in some of the results.
Okay, now in 2004, when President Bush won re-election, and he did so with the help of the religious right, there's no question about that, some on the left were wringing their hands after his victory and saying, you know, oh, this is like a theocracy. And they also spoke about the possibility, or the idea that there was a God gap between the Democrats. I remember the Democrats were even having some kind of meetings where they were reinventing themselves, and they were saying, hey, we found God. What are your thoughts about the God gap?
Well, it certainly continues, and if you look at this election's wide gaps between how regular churchgoers voted versus the non-regular or the non-churchgoing electorate. But the Democrats, at least this year, seem to have strategically decided that the God gap was not important to them. They could cobble together coalitions based on other issues that would give them the needed majority. So I think white evangelicals were largely written off by Democrats this time. And probably church-going Catholics were as well. And Obama was able to win by winning Hispanics and blacks and by whites who were non-church-going or infrequently church-going.
Okay, so suppose some Republican person who or aspired for office within the Republican Party, and they were to come to you for advice for next time around, as far as the religious voter, what would your advice be?
Well, that you have to do what Bush did twice and what Reagan did twice, and to have a comprehensive message that addresses economics, addresses social issues, addresses foreign policy, and that that's how you pull together a winning coalition. You can't rely exclusively on economics to give you a majority.
All right. Now, did the Mormon factor possibly play into this at all?
Well, it was widely expected that Romney's Mormonism would suppress the evangelical vote on some level. If it did, the data that we have available doesn't indicate it, because as mentioned, as the overall percentage, he got as many, if not more, evangelicals than George W. Bush did.
Well, and one of the things you said in your article is that weekly Protestant church attenders favored Romney 70% to 29%. So, and then as far as those who were Catholics, weekly mass attending Catholics supported Romney by 57% to 42%. So still more for the Protestant versus the Catholic side of things. Again, you show that, hey, if they were Catholic but they didn't go to church on a regular basis, well, they were more likely to vote for Obama.
Well, that's right, and many in the media have made a point, Obama got the majority of the Catholic vote. That shows the Catholics disregard the appeals of their bishops to focus on pro-life, pro-marriage, pro-religious liberty. But I think the bishops' appeals were successful on some level, and that Romney may have gotten an unprecedented level of church-going Catholics compared to where Republicans, especially losing Republicans, how many Catholics they typically get.
But now this this election, except for, I guess, the House going back into Republican hands, but even there were some setbacks. Overall, it seemed to be, a major defeat for the Republicans and for traditional values. I mean, I talked to some people on Wednesday morning, and you would have thought that America had died. I mean, it was so discouraging for them. But it seems like they were overstating things.
Yes, that's true after every election. So you'll, as you mentioned, after the 2004 election, there were wide fears on the left that the theocracy was impending because of all of these evangelicals who had voted for George W. Bush. And now suddenly after this election, religious conservatives are supposedly irrelevant and America has gone secular. But elections almost never are obviously very, very important. And this was a significant election, as all presidential elections are. But they're never completely decisive. And in American politics, few things are ever completely settled. And it's always an ebb and flow. And rarely does the culture or the electorate move in a straight line. And, of course, this year we had a president who is historically unique and much more appealing to more people than a typical candidate of the left. So it could be argued this his election in 08 and in 12 were unique experiences, but we'll just have to wait and see. But obviously, social conservatives lost on the marriage issue in four states for the first time.
Yeah, I'd like you to unpack that. That's the first time. I mean, even the California voters in 2008 voted for traditional marriage when given the choice to do so. And they had done so in, a non-binding referendum a few years before that as well. But now in Maine, in the Washington state, and in Maryland, they voted specifically to allow for same-sex marriage. Usually this is just imposed on the people against their wills by judicial fiat. But here it was the voters.
It was, and it's significant, and it certainly is bad news, but I don't think it's a time for despair, even in these very blue states, in a year when a liberal president won re-election overwhelmingly in those states. The votes were still pretty close, and the pro-marriage side did, in each of those states, did much better than the Republican candidate did. And, of course, the pro-marriage side was outspent in those states 8-1 by the pro-same-sex marriage side. And so there wasn't sufficient funding there, and I think possibly there was also a level of inattention or overconfidence in that marriage had won a resounding victory earlier this year in North Carolina. And I think conservatives just weren't paying sufficient attention to these referenda in the four states in this month.
Okay, now the fourth state being Minnesota, but the vote there wasn't, the people weren't voting necessarily yes or no on same-sex marriage. I believe they were voting to amend their constitution. So one could argue that there are other factors involved in that vote, potentially. But still, it was a setback for traditional marriage.
It was, very much so.
What about the so-called, this term is almost, is a very loaded term, but Obama and his supporters often like to tout the phrase social justice. And we know, of course, God is for justice. We know God cares about the poor. But sometimes when people talk about social justice and then try to invoke the Bible to support it, I think from a conservative perspective, you're going too far. You're going beyond what the Bible actually says. But what are your thoughts, and where did that fit into this particular campaign?
Well, as you know, the term social justice has been appropriated by the left, especially the religious left, going back many decades, perhaps a century even, in terms of providing a spiritual and theological justification for, in essence, the constant expansion of the federal welfare and regulatory state, and equates the expansion of state power with the expansion of the kingdom of God, in essence.
Wow.
And that gives the government the primary responsibility for caring for those in need.
Yeah, and the problem with that, I mean, the Bible is very clear. Love your neighbor as yourself. Give to the poor as if you're lending to the Lord, you know, and so forth. There's a lot on that. Jesus said, you know, whatever you did to the least of these, that you did unto me. But that's not the same as whatever you did unto the federal government. At force, by the way, you know, you're forced to do it, you did unto me. So there's a very, very different perspective there. Mark Tooley is our guest right now. He's from the Institute on Religion and Democracy, and we're discussing the fallout from the last week's election, and specifically trying to understand the role that religion played in it. One of the narratives, as Mark alluded to, one of the narratives from the dominant mainstream media is that essentially the religious right is dead, or that they didn't show up. And yet Mark and the statistics he's compiled, along with Ralph Reed of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, actually shows a different story. It shows up that Christians, traditional Christians, showed up quite well. They're just overwhelmed by some other forces. And by the way, it's my understanding that out of 117 million votes cast, 117 million for the president. It was 400,000 votes, specific votes in specific areas in involving four different states that cast the difference and made the difference, including the state of Virginia and the state of Ohio.
Yes, I've seen that figure. I'm not sure if it was entirely the electoral difference, but it was four very significant states. So very interesting. And, of course, the votes are still being counted. It's not clear yet exactly what the total voter turnout was. Last I heard, It was up to 121 million. But there's an estimate it may go as high as 129 before they get done, because there are still millions of votes still outstanding. But even if it gets to 129, it still will be below the 2008 figure, which was 131 million.
Oh, okay. Now, is the media overreading last week's election results? Are they overreading them?
Well, the media, and probably many other people as well, and of course the media obviously tends to be more liberal, and so it would be in their own interest to over-assess and to exaggerate the impact or the perceived mandate for President Obama. But in essence, as you remarked, it was ultimately a pretty status quo election. Democrats retained the presidency and the Senate, and Republicans retained the House of Representatives, as well as 30 governorships, and picked up a few state legislatures, I recall. So not much has changed.
All right. Now, when we look at Obamacare, that's interesting as an issue. It certainly has implications for one's world and life view. For example, on the issue of, let's say, life at the beginning of life, although I guess the issue of abortion is not directly addressed in that 2,600-page behemoth bill, the HHS mandate has definitely brought about, and that did become an issue in the election, and unfortunately not enough people cared about it, in my perspective, on the right side. But what are your thoughts about Obamacare and the election results?
Well, obviously it can't be overturned or probably even significantly amended in this particular Congress, so it will move forward, especially in 2014. As you know, there are many court challenges remaining to it, especially to the HHS contraceptive abortive patient mandate on religious institutions, and I would be relatively hopeful that the courts will come down on the side of the First Amendment and religious liberty, but that will be fought out over the next couple of years.
Now, you know, Mark, that's interesting. I want to make this point very clear. Some people think that the HHS mandate issue is only a Catholic issue, and they think, oh, well, I shouldn't care about it. But first of all, what they do to the Catholic Church, you know, today it's the Catholic Church, next time it's the Evangelical Church, the next time it's the Mormon Church, the next time it's the Jews, whatever. So we should care, number one. But number two, there's a lot of organizations that are evangelical in nature that are also fighting this, such as Wheaton College.
Well, that's right. There are several Protestant and evangelical schools who have joined in litigation against the mandate on religious liberty grounds. So, as you say, it should be of concern to all persons, with whatever their religious affiliation, who support religious liberty and freedom of conscience. And, of course, it's not just about contraceptives, but also about abortion-inducing drugs.
Sure. And what about the other spectrum of life? In other words, the other end of life, that is the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which is a part of Obamacare, that mandates that basically, you know, Sarah Palin called it the death panels, and she got in a lot of trouble for saying that. But for all practical purposes, the bureaucrats, you know, would make the decisions in Washington whether you would get care or not get care, depending on how old you were and so forth. So it's right there looming on the horizon, and I don't see how it could be stopped at this point. What are your thoughts? This is another aspect of Obamacare.
Well, it was, of course, and continues to be widely denied, but inevitably, if medical decisions are regulated by and determined by bureaucrats in Washington on an element of limited resources and scarcity, then it is inevitable that decisions will be made in terms of whether or not care can be provided to those who are at the end of life. And call it death panels or call it whatever, but those decisions will be made. And so it is a highly disturbing aspect of Obamacare, and we just have to hold on and not despair, or nor regard this as a settled issue, and to push forward with litigation and to push forward with getting the majorities needed to challenge Obamacare directly.
Okay, we have just a couple minutes to conclude. How about some some hopeful thoughts here. Give us some encouraging news. I know last week was a discouragement for people who hold to traditional values. Other than, let's say, the victory of Judge Roy Moore, who will be Chief Justice again, I guess, of the state judiciary of Alabama. That's fantastic. I know the man personally, and I sent him a congratulations note. But for the most part, everywhere traditional values seem to have lost in the election. So give us some good news here.
Well, one has to really look closely to find it in this election. Of course, there was a referendum in Massachusetts that was thankfully defeated that would have facilitated euthanasia. And so we can celebrate that even in a liberal state that euthanasia has not spread outside the Pacific Northwest as of yet. And also on the marriage issue, the fact that the referendum were close even in a liberal election in liberal states. And there has been a poll done showing that a majority of Americans still favor traditional marriage. That issue is still very much on the table. And, of course, we'll be going, it seems, before the U.S. Supreme Court now. So we'll just have to watch and wait.
Hmm. All right, great. Okay, well, Mark Tooley, thank you so much for being with us. Mark Tooley of the Institute on Religion and Democracy. Where can people read your article, this article, and other articles from your organization?
Well, please check us out on our website, which is theird.org, theird.org.
Okay, again, that's Institute on Religion and Democracy, Mark Tooley. Are you the executive director?
I am the president.
The president. Okay, I once interviewed about, I don't know, 10 years ago, Diane Nippers from the same organization. So would that be your predecessor then?
She is, yeah.
'Cause, yes, I understand she died and so forth. But I interviewed her in the early days when people were just beginning to comment on the persecution of Christians in other countries and realizing this is becoming, you know, since the end of the Cold War, Christians are becoming the number one victim of the number one humanitarian cause, really, in the whole world. It's amazing. And she was one of those on the vanguard, you know, alerting people to that. So you guys do great work. Thank you. God
bless.
Thank
you. It's a pleasure being with you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you now. And happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.